Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. We've had a series of emails into the station not happy with the opening of yesterday's show. Did you hear about that?
Ooh, breaking info here. Okay.
And all the same theme. They said some guy was on talking about a group of individuals nobody's ever heard of, and he confused the entire audience. I said, was it Buhner? He goes, no, it was the other guy.
See, I feel bad because I was partially responsible for not, if I was here,
well,
I could have, you know, put a kibosh on that.
I said, who? And it came down to like, they said, seven letters. Really? Two words, seven letters. I'd like to, Alex, can I have a T? There are two of them. Ding, ding. I'd like to buy a vowel. Is there a U? It's just one man's passion doesn't match up with a single person in the audience. All right, so actually, isn't there like one or two guys that are like big IndyCar guys like him, and they love it when he does it?
Sure.
Yeah,
there's a couple.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what's the population of the Valley? Thousands.
But our great friend of the show, Doug in Wellsboro, who calls in from time to time, he has mentioned about IndyCar talk with Kevin. But I'm still trying to figure out if he's truthful or if he's being.
I believe the word I would use for Doug's commentary, in my personal opinion, is mocking. Doug, Doug, I'm sure can speak for himself.
Sure,
but I always sensed it was more of a mocking tone. Doo-doo! Went by twice. I mean, especially today after that, what had to be a crushing admission about the Mario Andretti photo, where it is actually Aldo Andretti. Crushing.
No reaction from him as of yet, at least not from me. I don't know if he's...
That's because he owns the picture. And it's not Mario. It's not him, it's Aldo.
But probably the angle he would take out of that is that the value of the photo, a monetary value, just goes up in smoke. This from a man who hates it when we talk about business and sports on the show.
Oh, I know.
Oh, the irony of it all.
Yeah. And they are identical twins. At least back then they were. Now they do not look the same. Okay, just so you know. And the reason that, okay, back in 1969, as identical twins, you couldn't tell them apart. But Aldo Andretti had to have facial reconstructive surgery because he had a major racing accident. That's, you know, so if you see them today, what do you mean they're identical twins? That's the difference. Okay. And that's what happened. You know, but back then, no. That is him in the picture. And not Mario in the 1969 front row picture. And it turned out late. The accident that he had, where he needed major reconstructive surgery to his face, actually happened 3 months after Indy. So, and it was not his fault. It was a sprint race in Des Moines, Iowa. Let's see. Let's get our play-by-play call today. You heard it last night here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and the Phillies Radio Network.
Realmuto waiting on a 1-2 pitch. Here it comes. Swung on. Hit well. Left field and deep. Going back is Schwarber to the track. At the wall. It's gone. JT Realmuto has given the Phillies the lead here in the top of the 10th inning. A solo home run is sixth of the year. Phillies back on top 5-4.
Indeed. And you heard it last night here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, let's bring in Neil Coolong. Neil, Ben Roethlisberger, if you and I were running routes for him, it would take us forever to do it, but he complained about it. Great to have you with us.
Well, not yet, anyway.
Well, it's just the beginning.
He's not retiring yet.
It's just there'll be an opportunity. I want to tell you, Neil Coolong and Steve Jones, bad people. Bad people.
We run the wrong route. Anytime.
Well, with me, how can you tell you I've run the wrong route? I'm only three steps into it. By the time I'm just too slow.
That's what I said. You don't even know how bad I am yet. Let me finish it first.
Let me finish the route. Then you can tell me if I ran it right. It may take it longer than you realize. You'd like to have your quarterback to be your leader. I mean, idealistically, how far is Ben Roethlisberger in reality from actually being that guy?
I think overall, I think that Ben has an interesting way of phrasing things, and he has kind of odd timing. He also enjoys playing kind of a somewhat of a cat and mouse game.
Yeah, I know. He retires every 12 minutes. You know, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, there was the streak of that where he knows exactly what the result of those kinds of comments is going to be. My thought always was, if he's not doing it as part of some type of contract negotiation that we'll never know the details about, there isn't really a reason at all for him to be suggesting that he might retire at some point. I mean, he's got to know that that's going to be blown to tremendous proportions throughout the offseason when there isn't a whole lot to talk about. If that stuff doesn't bother him a whole lot, I guess that's fine. I just, given the choice, I would rather there not be speculation flying around. Maybe that's just me, and I don't know, maybe he gets a dollar every time his name gets mentioned. But as far as Ben within the team, within the locker room, I've been of the thought, and this is just my useless two cents, I've been of the thought that Ben has been in something of a transition in his career. You know, he was really close with Heath Miller. He's really close with Brett Kiesel. These are guys that aren't on the team anymore.
Right.
And they're replaced by younger and younger guys. Ben's getting up in age. There was a huge amount of time in his career where he was the younger player on a veteran-heavy team that had a lot established before he got there. I think he stayed in that position for a long time. There were always outspoken leaders around the Steelers locker room, and they were gone by about 2015 or so. Not to suggest that Ben didn't lead the team in any way. I just think from a certain perspective, I think he was kind of alienated from the younger players on the team. And what history will show, if we don't see it now, is there was a pretty large influx of youth for the Steelers the middle part of this decade. And it all came about pretty quickly. If you look at it from a 10,000-foot view, you had a lot of younger players come in, and quickly a lot of veterans left. Ben has been a captain. He's been a leader. He's obviously been the focal point of the team for a very long time. But when you don't have that support in the locker room, I think you might kind of retreat a little bit. I think maybe Ben has been doing that to some extent. The comments that he made on the radio show, I don't necessarily think were the best. I also don't think they were the worst things that he could have said.
Right.
I would just question why it is he says them at all. I mean, what's the gain for you in doing that? He wants to be able to speak his mind. I get that, but that's just simply a luxury that even franchise quarterbacks don't get. You can't say everything that you want to say. I think he tried to do that, and I think he did it in a way that tends to kind of turn people off a little bit. If you ask anybody outside of Pittsburgh, most of them don't like Ben Roethlisberger. He doesn't present himself in a way that will endear him to the larger public. Not that he should or not that he cares, just that's kind of the result of all of this. In the end, now the team has a pretty drastic and rapid transformation that they're going to have to undergo into to what's probably the final phase of Roethlisberger's career. He's going to have to be the center point of that because, frankly, they really don't have a whole lot of talent in the skill positions among their offense anymore. Ben's going to have to make a lot of guys a lot better. He doesn't have the luxury of having a once-in-a-generation player like Antonio Brown, an incredibly versatile running back like Le'Veon Bell. Mm-hmm. I get that Bell didn't play last year, but clearly the team planned on him playing. So they had the idea in mind that he was going to be there. They don't have that anymore. So he's going to have to lead from whatever way he finds his best in whatever way the players who are there are going to buy into it. And what that's going to mean is give and take on both sides. And I think that's something that I wouldn't say would be challenging for Ben. I think it's just going to be a little bit different perhaps than it has been the last couple of years because it's going to be a lot harder to just let his play on the field do the talking. He's going to have to step up in a way that probably much more magnified than it has been in the past. And this is a critical year for the Steelers in terms of where they're going as a future. And Ben has to be the guy rowing the boat more than anybody else.
Obviously, Mike Tomlin has had to negotiate challenges the last couple of years because, look, Antonio Brown creates challenges. Talent, but creates challenges. Le'Veon Bell situation created challenges. In your opinion, what are the challenges that Mike Tomlin has to face this year that are going to be different than in past years?
I think where we sit right now, we're going to get a lot of warm and fuzzy feelings. We're already starting to see the comments come out about how they're much closer, they're more unified. The bottom line is we have no idea what this offense is going to be like when you get on the field. Antonio Brown carried a lot of water. Obviously, Ben does as well, but Antonio Brown is a ridiculously talented player who handled a huge amount of this team's offense,
right.
Probably more than all but maybe one or two other receivers in the NFL. You don't see the receiver being the primary focal point of an offense all that often around the league. There aren't too many of them that do that, and few, if any, did that better than Brown did. They're not going to replace him. It's impossible to replace him. So they have to reinvent what they're going to do on offense. And from Mike Tomlin's perspective, my thought is really this kind of feels like the same type of issue that you had defensively back in probably 2013.
Right.
There's a lot that they have to do with a lot of faces that they're used to producing not there anymore. And the real trick with 2013, as you might remember, 2012, they had a statistically decent defense that kind of faltered a bit down the stretch, including the fiasco in Denver in the wild card round after that season. 2013, they completely collapsed when they lost Larry Foote very quickly into the year. Larry Foote was a solid player. I don't think anybody outside Pittsburgh really remembers who Larry Foote is.
Sure.
But he was a reasonable player. If you lose a guy like that to a season-ending injury and your defense falls apart completely, you really don't have a very deep or strong defense. I could see a similar situation like that happening to the Steelers' offense if one player goes down. And take Roethlisberger out of it because that's right. True of most teams. If he goes down, you're probably, you know, if your franchise quarterback goes down, you're probably in trouble. So take him out. I mean, it could be any one offensive lineman. It could be any receiver. Certainly could be any receiver. Even a tight end. I mean, the Steelers' offense does not have the pop that it used to have. They've been trying to fix the same type of issue on defense for the last 5-6 years.
Right.
If that happens on offense as well, they're in real trouble. It remains to be seen who's going to step up and actually play. I mean, not to disparage the idea that they're getting along. I mean, I think that's great. You know, it's good that you have that piece, but you got to perform to some degree as well. Can these guys play together? Can they reinvent the offense as we've seen it over the last couple of years? I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about 30 points a game. That was their goal. They're nowhere near that now. How are they going to rebuild the offensive side of the ball? To me, that's Mike Tomlin's biggest challenge this year.
Big picture question. I realize this is something they'd have to negotiate in the next collective bargaining agreement, but should the roster size be greater than it is now?
You know, I think it would probably help out a bit from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah.
I think the reason they don't have that, I can't imagine the union wouldn't want that, but the reason they don't want to have it is because they don't want to have to pay that much.
Right, I understand.
Tack on a bit. They'd have to probably boost the cap to, maybe not call the top 51, but the top 54 or something in the offseason to account for the salaries that are coming in there. It's not a huge amount of money, but I would imagine knowing the owners, they're going to, scrimp over every penny. If they're making personnel and competitive decisions based on these final roster spots that are making chump change compared to the guys at the top. I think just from a competitive standpoint, it makes more sense to have larger rosters, but with that means not just more salaries, but more travel, more coaching, fewer reps for the guys that you want to get reps, more guys that might not practice barely anything at all during the week and still get, you know, the minimum for their level of service in the league. There's a lot of wasted money, I think, that would go into raising it. But at the same time, it would make sense to not have all the machinations during the season of the roster, having to you know, put this guy on the street for a week before coming back for a week. If you could keep guys for the sake of injury, boost the amount that you're carrying around, boost the amount of developmental projects that you might want to keep in meeting rooms to give them a chance to understand what you're trying to do for the sake of the future. To me, I think it makes sense, but I don't think it's something they are really going to want to look at anytime soon. I think they like the idea that a lot of these guys serve a very specific reason and they don't have to latch into them for a whole year. They can kind of, you know, cut them and bring them back as they need. A lot of guys like that in Steelers history. I forgot. I'm trying to remember who it is. There was a guy that we tracked over 3 years, had 22 roster transactions, you know, cut, brought back. I mean, it makes more sense just from an administrative perspective just to have the guy stay on the roster. You obviously need him. But, you know, these guys don't make enough money to justify that, and the owners are going to pay attention to that kind of thing.
Any update on how James Conner is right now?
Everything I've heard about him is he'll be ready to go come mini camp, come training camp.
Okay.
I think that's really kind of the key thing with him, though. I mean, you're going to have to lessen his workload to some degree. Mike Tomlin's going to have to get it out of his head that you know, you can ride a guy until his wheels fall off, because, you know, instead of falling off second half of week 17 like Willie Parker did that 1 year, now they're falling off in week 13. I would imagine one thing that Mike Tomlin would want this year more than anything else is their primary running back available and ready to play in week 16. He hasn't had that in I don't know how long. I guess 2014 you had Bell, but he went down in week 17. They haven't had the running back that kind of carried the workload for them available in the playoffs for a fairly long amount of time, or at least not consistently in any way, shape, or form. So I put Connor in bubble wrap, tell him to you know, stay in condition, eat right, you know, just be ready to go. But we're not going to touch you probably until a week after pads come out in training camp. You really can't just put miles on any one running back anymore. They've needed to address that position. Now they have in back-to-back drafts with mid-round guys looking to, you know, kind of fill specific roles with Connor as the established workhorse back, and that's fine. But you can't get into that 280 carry range by week 14 anymore. They've really got to kind of dumb that down. Try to you know, take carries off of him as best they can. I mean, Connor's been hurt, you know, season-ending injuries the last 2 years too. So that's going to be a factor this year as well. They're going to need fresh runners that are at least, you know, kind of healthy toward the end of the season.
Neil and I just finished running our routes for Ben. He'll be complaining about it on Monday.
He's looking for a stamp to mail it. I'm 15 yards down the field. That's the time he needs.
Neil, thanks so much. Have a great holiday weekend.
Definitely. You too, guys. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Yes, this is the 50-year anniversary of Mario Andretti winning the 500, the Indianapolis 500. And now we find out that the picture of Andretti that they take with the everybody in the front row is actually his twin brother, Aldo. To be honest with you, I think that's got to be a blow to the suit, don't you think?
I would think so.
Yeah,
it may take a while just, to you need at least a standing eight count.
He's just going to have to overcome it. How, I don't know. But he thought that was a valuable piece of memorabilia, and it turns out, no. Pictures of fraud.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Tonight you have the Bucks and the Raptors with home court so far holding in that one. The Bucks up 2-1. Game four is in Toronto tonight. And the Blues will take on the Sharks tonight. Blues can actually get to their first Stanley Cup since 1970 when they lost the famous Bobby Orr in overtime, where Derek Sanderson in back of the net fed it to Orr up front, and then Orr flipped it past Glenn Hall, and Noel Picard flipped Orr in the air, and he's flying through the air with the stick up, and that's the statue in front of the TD Garden. Well, that goal was the last time the St. Louis Blues were in the Stanley Cup final. They were swept in four games.
So St. Louis is not part of the original six. They were brought in with the group after the original six, the group that went in with the Penguins,
yes.
Correct?
Penguins, Flyers, St. Louis Blues, Minnesota North Stars, who are now the Dallas Stars, the Oakland Seals, who are actually now also the Dallas Stars. That's convoluted. They went to Cleveland, then they merged with Minnesota. Now they're the Dallas Stars. The L.A. Kings. Did I get them all? Penguins, Flyers, Minnesota, St. Louis, L.A. Kings, and the Oakland Seals. Yeah, those are the six that came in. And I think that the we'll see how it plays out, because they were last place in January. Last place. And they were able to dig themselves out of it and now get themselves to a point where here they are. They have a chance to get to the final against the Bruins. Pretty special. So that's what's coming up in the playoffs tonight. And, of course, the Phillies are back in action tonight as well after, as you heard, JT Realmuto earlier did such a great job getting them to, to put themselves in a spot where they won. So that's what's coming up. I mentioned earlier about the about Lamar Stevens working out for the Indiana Pacers. They're doing it in two groups. It turns out the group that he is with includes Nick Claxton of Georgia, considered a first-round pick, and Carson Edwards of Purdue, also considered a first-round pick. He's in that group today, and of course we heard about Josh Reeves interviewing with and working out with the Celtics. We're in a very interesting time in sports, but sometimes if you look for it, you'll find some of the good news in sports. And here's one for you. I was able to read Peter Gammon's column today in The Athletic, and about the difference in baseball players now compared to 10 to 20 years ago. And even shorter than that, maybe 5 years ago. The baseball players today, according to his column, spend a lot more time with the younger players and are really willing to impart their knowledge to them. Look, the game is becoming younger all the time. They don't. I've mentioned earlier how there's been a trend to stay away because of analytics from the 33-plus year old veteran. Analytics says Aaron is productive. Now, I mean, look at some of the stars that we have today. Cody Bellinger's 23. Fernando Tatis Jr.'s 20. Gleyber Torres is 22. Rafael Devers is 22. Adalberto Mondesi is 23 years old. I haven't gotten around to Ronald Acuna yet. I haven't got around to Soto yet. I mean, is Soto 20? Acuna is 21? Rhys Hoskins? And you want to talk about, there's some young guys out there. Aaron Judge. And Freddie Freeman of the Braves, when Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies came up, said, if they can make a spreader, bring them on, and I'll do anything I can to help them. Manny Machado, I remember how J.J. Hardy helped me. He's now helping Fernando Tatis Jr. All right. This past weekend, obviously, I saw the Astros and the Red Sox play. Alex Bregman said every game between these two teams in this park feels like October. Okay? But then it was interesting, according to Gammons, to watch the players interact. George Springer, first pitch of the game, by the way, Dan and I are sitting there, and Springer lines one to center field, and Jackie Bradley Jr. just missed it by 6 inches, and it went for a triple. I mean, that's how the game started. You're like, yeah, this is great. But he is really considered, quote, an alpha dog. And guess what he does? Every single player in the Astros will tell you, right, that if you want to talk to a guy about any part of the game, he wants to talk to you. Michael Chavis, another outstanding young player, J.D. Martinez, of course, now is a veteran. Martinez came up with the Astros years ago. He said he was subjected to the usual juvenile frat boy hazing. So one time I was supposed to get beer for the entire bus for the ride back in spring training. So I had to walk to a place, get the beer, and carry it all back by myself. My back was killing me, but that was the way they thought it should be. Martinez says when he was a rookie, he asked a highly paid veteran slugger for some ideas and help with his swing. The veteran blew him off. Rather than acting the same way as he developed into a star himself, Martinez says, quote, I vowed I'd never be that way. I wanted to help anyone who wanted it because I know what it meant to be treated the way I was. So one Astros coach is sitting there and he's observing that Chavis was hitting in the same group with Martinez and Mookie Betts. Chavis was called up on April 20th. And according to the hitting coach for the Red Sox, Chavis asked as many questions as anyone that has come up in years. So Chavis asked J.D. Martinez about the way he lets the ball travel and the way he drives at the right center. It was something he immediately adopted. His bat speed's obvious. The five longest Red Sox homers this year have been hit, by the way, by Michael Chavis. Martinez and Betts asked specifically for him to be in their hitting group. They say they take him to the cage for their sessions. Martinez and Betts Friday night taking practice. Chavis was the one on the knee next to the cage studying. They say that's just the way it is. Betts said, quote, it's about winning. It's about being a teammate. It's about sharing the love of the game. Nothing special. That's just what happens here. That's our culture. It is amazing. It's great. It's great to see that because, of course, there's such insecurity in sports today. There's insecurity in everything. Can you keep your job? Can you do what you're doing? All right. Do you want to teach the young person to replace you? Joe Flacco said with the Denver Broncos, quote, it wasn't his job to teach Drew Lock. Now, by the way, it should be pointed out that Drew Lock, when asked about that, said, to be honest with you, he's treated me great. So, I mean, you don't know, if you're caught off guard by the question or how the question was asked. But it's great to see in this era that kind of thought, that kind of professionalism. You have no idea how many times at a football or a basketball practice here at Penn State where I see an older player pulling a younger player aside and talking to them. Mike Miranda last year talking to Ryan Bates. Mike Miranda talking to Connor McGovern. Jonathan Holland talking to Pat Freiermuth. Nick Bowers talking to Pat Freiermuth. Yeah, I saw this over and over again. Koa Farmer pulling aside Micah Parsons. Jan Johnson with Ellis Brooks. Basketball, Josh Reeves talking to Isaiah Brockington, who's going to get the job this year. Lamar Stevens out there telling some of the younger players what he needs to have done and where he needs it. Needs the position of a player to be on the floor. And yeah, I do see this all the time in this life. Saquon Barkley was always talking with Miles Sanders. Saquon Barkley was always talking with Journey Brown. Yeah, Journey Brown was a true freshman here at the time. He was always talking to them. They run those scrimmages on Sunday night, so Journey Brown's freshman year. The biggest cheerleader out there for Journey Brown was Saquon Barkley. So I'm seeing this on the collegiate level all the time where I'm seeing the older players talking to the younger players all the time, answering questions. And when I think that when players aren't on the practice field, say it happens to be a special teams period. So obviously some of them have to be out there with special teams. What's always impressed me about watching practice is, and you know, especially the last few years, how much football they are talking on the sideline. You know, the angle, what the angle I need to take that. No, you got to use your hands better. I mean, I'm seeing this all the time. Sharif Miller talking to Yitor Gross-Matos. Shaka Toney talking to some of the younger players. All the time. On the sideline, you would think, oh, they're 18 to 23-year-old kids. They're probably goofing off on the sideline or whatever, and, you know, having fun. Nope. They are talking football all the time. Basketball guys, the same thing. They're talking basketball all the time. You can tell in the wrestling room when you're around the wrestlers. Man, it is a constant communication about what they're doing and why they're doing it. It's good to see. Forget just happened with our digital media department. We'll come back. I mean, he's not going to give up those accounts, do you think? No.
Got to keep some in the mix.
Well, if he loses some, will he have any left?
Touche.
We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Phillies are on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Swing and a drive to deep left field. Back goes Granderson to the wall. He looks up. It's gone. Goodbye. Couple rows back into the left field stands. Andrew McCutchen, a solo home run. It's his fifth home run of the season.
Phillies baseball on WKOK is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, Turbinville National Bank, Whispering Oaks Vineyard, and W&L Subaru.
Your home for Phillies baseball is News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You may have heard a story that we talked about a couple of years ago, maybe even 3 years ago, about Georgia Tech basketball coach Josh Pastner. And the accusation was he was sexually assaulting a woman in a hotel room in February 2016. Well, guess what? The accusers in that case are now facing criminal fraud charges. Turns out that Ron Bell, former friend of Josh Pastner, was charged Friday with providing false information to law enforcement and facilitation of a fraud scheme practice. Bell and his girlfriend, Jennifer Penley, are accused of being engaged in a plan or scheme to allege false, fraudulent accusation of sexual assault against Josh Pastner with the goal of obtaining an anticipated monetary settlement judgment, according to a court record. Penley called police on May 8th, I think it was in 2016, and reported that Pastner sexually assaulted her in Houston in a hotel room while coaching at Memphis more than 3 years ago. It was the first time she had reported the alleged assault to police. Penley's call came ahead of mediation in a civil lawsuit related to the accusation. A court filing by Pastner's attorney last year included recorded jailhouse conversations that suggested the couple had fabricated the allegations. Pastner has denied it the entire time, saying, quote, "There is zero truth to any of those disgusting, bogus allegations. It's disgusting." They issued an arrest warrant for Penley last week. She failed to appear in court twice to be arraigned. They also got a security guard who works at Georgia Tech basketball games to be in on the scheme. He then finally came forward and said he lied about witnessing Pastner inappropriately touching Penley before a game against Sam Houston State in Atlanta in November 2016. He later admitted he was not even working that day and was out of state. So here is the here's a case where the coach has been accused bad, so there are the headlines all over the place, and it turns out he says it's disgusting and not true, and guess what? He's right. It's disgusting and not true. So now they're facing charges in the case. And by the way, this is the same guy, Bell, who was alleged that he provided Georgia Tech basketball players Josh Okogie and Tadrick Jackson with improper benefits by paying them to fly to his home in Tucson, Arizona, and paying for their meals at a restaurant in Atlanta. Bell also alleged he sent the players shoes and shirts that he purchased online. Pastor became aware of the violation and immediately reported it to compliance. The NCAA suspended Okogie for 6 games and Jackson for 3. They also required them to repay the amounts of the benefits they received. Georgia Tech, meanwhile, put on notice of allegations, but Pastner has not been named in any of the allegations. Georgia Tech, by the way, has to respond by, I think, next week. Bell does not have exactly the greatest history on the planet. He served 4 years in an Arizona prison from 2009 to 2013 because he was convicted on felony drug charges. He was arrested in March of last year on a fugitive warrant from Georgia for a probation violation stemming from an earlier conviction. Other than that, a reliable source. But the headlines, of course, for Josh Pastner were all bad. He denied it, and it turned out he's right. Hopefully, and you know this doesn't usually happen, but you would hope that the headline would be just as blaring in his favor. But we all know that doesn't usually happen. I'm in studio with you tomorrow.
Can't wait.
It's the third time this month I've been there.
Yeah.
Tell the suit I'm going to be there between 10 and noon tomorrow, and then I'm leaving.
Got it. Good to go.
Because if he finds out I'm there tomorrow, you and I are going to be sitting there like IndyCar hostages. I mean, not even Roger Penske wants to listen.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.